it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. The final hammer blow has landed to Liverpool's title aspirations down at West Ham, with Salah's strop sending social media into a frenzy. We'll talk about Mohamed Salah's future, as well as his Liverpool teammates, as we analyse the state of the squad Arne Slot's about to inherit. And we do that with James Pearce and Simon Hughes. And as ever, let's start with those three words. So you know where I'm going here.
Well, you're directing me more towards Salah and Klopp or Liverpool's performance, because Liverpool's performance is no, not again.
You have thought about it. No, not again. I like it. I was just going to charge you and say, what you're saying to me there is you haven't thought about it, but you have thought about
have,
it.
Yes, I have. So I'll leave James with a wide open field to come up with something about the spat.
Oh, well, I was actually going to go for, just to encapsulate the mood currently, and just a phrase that I hadn't heard since the days when Liverpool were last on the brink of winning the title, which was null and void. Let's just, can we just start again?
I agree. Bring on summer, I say. But we'll see what they're saying over on the Walk On podcast Facebook group. Eric Lee, sab for Klopp. Sab for Klopp, Eric! How about being sab for us? Ross Pretty. Oh no, Mo. Mark Miles, disagreements are normal. Mark, that's just too sensible. It's too sensible for a time like this. We need a bit of heightened anger and rage and drama. And Rob Mason, Salah contract extension? Well, that's a good question, Rob, and we'll get to it very soon.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
We don't need reminding, do we? You know, the London Stadium, probably the worst ground in the Premier League, and that includes Kenilworth Road. And pretty poor performance all round, James.
Yeah, I think it kind of was pretty much exactly the game you probably feared it was going to be with Liverpool in the shape they're currently in, I think, in terms of a little bit of a reaction, but not enough of one. And having got themselves back into it and got themselves in a winning position, lacking the ability to see the game out and giving away another avoidable goal. Issues at both ends of the pitch that have cost them dear at the business end of the season. So to be honest, it felt like a non-event of a end of season game between two teams where they already felt as if it had fizzled out. I was slightly surprised that there was some talk. I was at the London Stadium, but someone said to me that on the TV, they were talking about, you know, well, that is that it for the title for Liverpool? And it was like, no, it was well and truly done and dusted long before Liverpool turned up at the London Stadium.
Yeah, and you know, our favourite kickoff time, say 12:30. Did you even watch it?
yeah, I did. I didn't see all of it. I saw most of it. I had a few family engagements. I saw all the second half. It was like Liverpool slightly better on the ball, slightly bit more confident, a little bit more organised, but not convincing enough, I'm afraid. And it just felt like West Ham would absorb the pressure and then throw a ball into the box. Mikel Antonio would appear and he would score. And that's exactly what happens. At the end of the day, it's just not good enough if you want to compete for the title, or if you want to even, you know, stay in there until the last day. I sort of hoped after the Everton game that the response would be, well, Liverpool are put themselves in a position by the end of the season where they're going into the last game of the season with something still left to play for, albeit, you know, other teams being in the driving seat. That was my hope, that they'd be somewhere near that, or at least with two games to go. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be like that, does it, Tony?
No, no. I mean, let's face it, the only real excitement there, James, was the touchline spat. What was it like from that? The few yards in the press box, was, which is only about, what, I'd say 450, 500 yards away.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in being in the stadium, I only really picked up on it very late on. It was like just before the substitution was made. It was clear that something had gone on. I just saw Darwin Núñez step in and act as peacemaker, and you think, well, something strange has happened when Darwin is the cool-headed one in a situation and urging everyone else to show a bit of composure. So
he's like, come on, raw mates, we've all had a drink.
And then, of course, when you watch the full version back, it's just not great. Sometimes I think there is a tendency to pounce on, you know, any little show of petulance and say, and blow it out of all proportion. But I don't actually go along with the idea that this has been blown out of proportion. Certainly not by us, because I think it was a big deal, because it's Mo Salah. You know, you're talking about a global icon who is known for his kind of humility and dignity and everything else, as well as his incredible talent with a ball at his feet. And he's a member of the leadership group, an absolute role model to those young players in the squad. And it wasn't just a few seconds of petulance. You know, that exchange went on for over a minute when you watch the full video back. You know, it started with Klopp, his usual routine of, you know, shaking hands and embracing players before they come on. And Salah seemed reluctant to do that. And so then Klopp kind of turns back towards Núñez and Gomez, who are also waiting. Obviously, they're a bit more open, well, a lot more open to his warmth. And then kind of, because the game's continuing, Klopp goes to walk off. But you can see he's obviously smarting from something Salah said to him. So then Klopp walks back towards Salah and has some angry words of his own. And then Salah obviously reacts to that. And that's when you see the arms being thrown in the air, the pointing, and then Salah giving it back before Núñez steps in and tries to calm it down. So, I think what we saw was immense frustration that had been building and building and building probably over the last, what, 6-7 weeks. And then it erupted on the touchline at the London Stadium.
This is a big story. I agree with James. You know, people saying, you know, listen to the comment at the start of the show about, oh, these things happen. It's like, well, no, they don't really. They don't happen on TV in front of everybody. They rarely do. I mean, I think the last time there was a show of dissatisfaction towards Klopp, it was it Jordan Henderson in 2018-19 as he came off the pitch at Old Trafford. He obviously wasn't happy, but it wasn't necessarily directed at the manager in such a forceful way. And, you know, Henderson did seek to sort of diffuse that situation and clarify his frustration afterwards. So it's certainly not, you know, on that scale. You know, I thought it was pretty revealing, really, that clearly Salah is frustrated with a lot of things, possibly himself, undoubtedly the manager. If, you know, it's the first time in his Liverpool career when he's been in and out the team, whether the manager's been trying to manage his fitness situation, having come back from, you know, a tricky injury and not performed to the levels, or whether, you know, he's thinking, well, he's not giving us enough, we need to try something else. If you try and take a neutral view, it's quite fascinating to watch, because you never see this sort of thing. You know, you don't see many, if any, players having a pop at Guardiola, and it sort of strikes against this, I suppose, the image that Klopp always chooses the right words as well, you know, to find a way to get through to his players. I can understand why people are saying, well, it's the, you know, the player has always got to listen to the manager and the manager's word counts, but there is scope for a discussion about whether the manager has managed that situation particularly well or chosen his words in a way that's going to stimulate and motivate Salah. Clearly it didn't.
I mean, I also think if the manager's there next year, it probably happens a bit differently. I think the fact that he's leaving that plays into that. James, I also think that maybe we could have, well, you know, sort of whitewashed it and just moved on if it wasn't for those pretentious words as Salah stalked through the mix zone. There will be fire if I speak today.
It's like Russell Crowe or something, you know, like in Gladiator.
But when he said that, you're like, oh, aye, here we go. It's all going off.
Yeah, I was surprised because, I must have waited in mix zones when Salah has walked past hundreds and hundreds of times over the last 7 years. And he's in that period, he stopped twice to speak to the UK written press. So I don't think anyone was under any illusions that we were going to get some sparkling prose and an extensive Salah interview off the back of it. But I was expecting the standard response of not today, thanks. And yeah, when he came through flanked by one of Liverpool's security guards and asked him to stop. Yeah, I was surprised when he said that. I mean, it should be said, he said it kind of really matter-of-factly. He wasn't smarting. He wasn't angry. He also wasn't chuckling to himself. It was if you know, there'll be fire if I speak today. And I said to him, fire, as in like, because I was just double checking really that I'd heard him right. And he said, and he kind of turned his head over his shoulder and said, of course. And you know, literally a minute before, I'd had a message off someone in the press conference room saying, this is what Klopp's just said. It's all sorted. They talked about it in the dressing room. Klopp was then asked, does Salah see it as sorted as well? And Klopp said, yes, that's in my impression. And it was like, well, where his manager has just tried to defuse the situation, clearly, you know, what Salah has just done with those words is inflame it. You can't get away from that. So, I mean, I was disappointed because I thought, if you're Salah after that, and bearing in mind, yes, of course he's frustrated. He's probably angry with himself because he will know better than anyone. He's been nowhere near his usual levels since he's come back from injury. He'll be frustrated and angry at what's happened to the team because he's fiercely ambitious. He would have been desperate to be a Premier League champion again. He knows that's not happening. And obviously his pride has been hurt by, I think, what being left out three of the last six games. And he would probably be fair to say, well, how am I supposed to get rhythm if you're not giving me that run of games to build up that rhythm? But, you know, the reality is he hasn't, you know, I don't think anyone would argue that he hasn't been good enough to command an automatic starting spot because his contribution has waned so much. So I just thought he should have either done one or two things. He should have either played it down and said, oh, you know, it was nothing or whatever, or even better, apologise because... And of course, there's two sides to every story, and we don't know exactly what Klopp said to him to prompt that reaction. But you can't react like that in front of your manager. Not someone that's elevated you to the heights that Salah has been at over the course of the Klopp tenure. I just thought, if you've got a problem with him, bite your lip and have a word behind closed doors, because, you know, inevitably, it was, you know, I just thought it was a sad sight to see Klopp disrespected like that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're sponsored for this episode of Walk On by LinkedIn, so it's only right that we crowbar in a reference to Liverpool's super slick recruitment process while we talk them up. Because when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like Arnie Slot, probably. In any given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. In fact, on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/walk. That's linkedin.com/walk to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Have your say and get involved by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com.
And Monty, after a weekend of fevered speculation, David Ornstein then revealed on The Athletic that Liverpool are fully expecting Salah to stay next season. No, I read that, say. I read that as like, well, let's maintain his value. We don't want to say we expect him to go this summer because people go, oh, well, you know what? It's like we're
you're so cynical, Tony.
Yeah, well, it's I've been around a long time.
I share your view on that, Tony. I mean, at the end of the day, Liverpool, as soon as you say players are for sale, then his value decreases, doesn't he, essentially? Yeah. So, because everybody knows that you're keen to sell. And equally, I suppose Liverpool don't want to be, we've seen this in the past, you know, when big name players have left, that Liverpool certainly don't want to be in a position where it's shown as them being keen for the player to go. It would be an ideal scenario if it was, you know, they get as much money as possible and Liverpool's reputation is intact while Salah is the one seen as wanting to leave. So I wasn't that surprised by that stance, that public stance. I mentioned it last week, but I look back to that injury that he got in January at AFCON. Another moment when I was accused of overplaying the situation by making it far too dramatic as he went down holding his hamstring. And I was like, no, this could have serious repercussions both for Salah's season and Liverpool's season because hamstrings just don't clear up, you know.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the podcast quite a lot. It's always the bad sign.
Yeah, it is. It is a bad sign. So that is the concern for me with Salah. To what extent is that injury going to hamper him getting back to where he was before it? And naturally, when you get the other side of 30, these conversations always start about your physical capabilities as well. So I have a bit of sympathy with him on that. Not everything should come down to stats, should it? Because it depends what role you're being asked to play. I mean, his goals output this season is still healthy. You know, obviously assists ain't too bad either. I guess it's what it might come down to is what exactly the new manager wants out of a player in his position, how he sees his role. I suppose that is the key here above everything else. Like, if they want the high press, I mean, the reality is Salah has, somebody will probably come wielding a sheet and telling me I'm wrong, but Salah has never been responsible for the execution of the high press as much as the other two players who are front with him in Firmino and Mane. So in terms of high press, it's never been his key responsibility. It's been the impacts of what he does, whether it's goals or the passes that he makes more recently, or the movement and his strength holding onto the ball. So I don't see any of that changing personally, dramatically. It's whether he can get the confidence back into his body. I think that, you know, there's a confidence issue potentially here as well, which people overlook. I mean, he's viewed as being unbreakable in a lot of ways. And a man who's like taken care of his body for so long has never had an injury like this. So maybe it just prompted him as well to sort of second guess himself. You'll have to snap out of it pretty quickly because, you know, it then becomes an issue where you sort of don't do the stuff that you ordinarily would do. So, I mean, we'll probably discuss this later, but I would like to see him stay and break more records. I don't like this culture at the moment where basically, well, everything comes down to finance and it means, you know, new history can't be broken by anyone, basically. You know, it's going to be very hard for players to spend their whole careers at Liverpool. I know Salah's had a long, extensive career before, but I'd like Salah to break more goal-scoring records and I'd like him to finish his career at Liverpool and finish on a high. You certainly don't want it finishing like this, given how influential he's been for the team. Because, I mean, we could break it down for, there's all sorts of players, isn't there, who symbolise the Klopp era. But I do think still that when you look back, scoring the sheer number of goals that he did in his first season made fans believe that there was somebody on the pitch capable of achieving what seemed the impossible.
You're putting too much emotion into football, Simon. This is the wrong time for that. Michael Edwardson's new robot army are taking over. James, will emotion have any say in what happens to Salah? And more to the point, actually, you know, joking aside, will Slot have any say what happens to Salah?
He will certainly have a say, yeah. It'll be one of the big topics, I think, that is addressed in those discussions that he has with Richard Hughes, obviously the new sporting director, and Michael Edwards. I think Liverpool will try and take emotion out of the decision-making process because that the owners regard that as one of Edwards' strengths in terms of, you know, you think back to, you know, when, say, for example, I don't know, Wijnaldum, Klopp desperate to keep Wijnaldum And Edwards was adamant that no, that wouldn't be a good use of the club's resources with given his age and kind of the miles he had on the clock at the time. And there isn't an easy answer to the Salah one. I think because after something like Saturday, everyone wants to know, is he going? Is he staying? What? You know, and I agree with you guys in terms of, well, of course, Liverpool are going to say they expect him to stay. They're not going to say, well, we expect him to go. But there's also so many moving parts that Liverpool aren't control. It's not a case of, does Arne Slot want Mo Salah? On the one hand, it's like, and I still think, I know I'm probably on shakier ground than I was a few weeks ago when I said this, but I still believe it's too soon to say that Salah is in decline, because I still think we're seeing the effects of that, you know, not just one bad hamstring injury, but coming back and then immediately breaking down and then go back to rehab for another 3 weeks. And what that does psychologically in terms of lacking that trust in your body. So, you know, Salah is just an incredible athlete that I wouldn't put it past him to have a summer off, come back and be absolutely brilliant again next season. But of course, there is that nagging thought in your mind now that is that kind of hamstring issues, is that the start of things to come? Have we kind of lost the durable Salah, the one who clocked up over 50 games consistently season after season? And also you think what happens will be, you know, so much will be depending on Salah himself, because when that big bid from Saudi arrived last summer, it didn't arrive till, was it, I think it was deadline day, wasn't it? It was like, well, certainly within 24 hours of the deadline. So it was, I don't know, it just smacked to me of almost, surely the Saudis didn't seriously think that Liverpool would sell at that point. I don't know, it just felt, if you were really serious, you would have slapped that bid on the table 6-8 weeks ago. And it was a no-brainer then, because Liverpool didn't have the chance to replace him. I still think that if that kind of, you know, say for argument's sake, there was 100 million on the table at the start of June, then I think that's something you have to weigh up. I think that's just common sense. But of course, a lot of it is, well, what would you do with that money? What can you go and get that, you know, because it's all well and good saying, well, you've just got to take the money, but you've also got to have a clear plan, because you don't have to go too far back in Liverpool's history to find examples of them getting a big windfall and squandering it. You know, you think
you can get two Lazar Markovic and one Emre Can for that money.
Exactly. Or you could even get an Alberto Aquilani for a Xabi Alonso if you want one. I think at the moment there's no indication that Salah wants to go. There's also no indication that the Saudi Pro League really believe they can get him this summer, which is interesting, because they seem to think they would have a better chance of getting him in 2025. And rewind 2 years, when Salah was in a contract dispute with Liverpool, you know, going up to the Champions League final 2 years ago, Salah's camp were adamant that he would not go when he's got 1 year left. That their stance was that you're better off just sitting tight and going as a free agent in 12 months, when of course it's much more financially lucrative to a player to go as a free agent. So yeah, there's so many moving parts with this one. I think it's far too easy to just say this is exactly what will happen. I mean, you talk about a new contract for Salah. Well, what do you give him?
He's not going to get a pay rise.
With players of that age, usually Liverpool go down the route of heavily incentivized. I can't see Salah wanting to sign up to that kind of deal.
Yeah, and one thing I would say is I don't think Salah's ready to go to Saudi Arabia. I think if he does leave this summer, he'd want to go to a club in Europe that could compete for big prizes.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tony. I think they're still catching up, you know, in terms of standards and infrastructure. You know, there's a long way to go. I think he'd find, from a sporting sense, it'd be very unrewarding. I speak to a few people who've worked over there, and they just say, you know, the gap's enormous, really. I know they're spending a lot of money, but, you know, Salah judges everybody by his own standards, really. And I think one of the things that has frustrated him over a long period of time is, you know, particularly in Egypt, his view is that there needs to be an increased professionalism, you know, in the way players conduct themselves and live their lives, and the way the FA runs itself, and a whole host of other things. And I think if he went there now, I just think he'd get really wound up quite quickly. I think, I would imagine he's quite aware of this as well. But it was a point that James just made there. I think people are sort of underestimating the influence of the fact when he's a free agent, you know, he can potentially pocket an absolute, let's put it this way, shitload of money for himself. Mm.
But is that a technical term?
It is. You know, I Liverpool can't allow him to become a free agent. It's going to be a fascinating.
What would
summer.
You do, Tony? What would you if it was your call this summer? Because I cannot understand. To me, it also boils down to how much of an overhaul Liverpool needs at this moment, and how soon they think another one might be needed. I mean, they obviously had a substantial one to the midfield over the summer. You know, the forward line, that they might stop and evaluate and think, let's try and get rid of Nunes and Diaz.
Well, we'll get into that. But probably if it was me, I would offer him a 2-year contract on more or less the same money, try to incentivize as much as possible. I'd want to keep him around for at least another year, but wouldn't want him walking away on a free in 12 months' time. And if he wouldn't sign a contract that suited the club, I'm afraid I'd have to show him the door, and I'd do that with a very, very heavy heart. So let's talk about some of those others. I think James, Trent Alexander-Arnold, that's a deal that we know the club are prioritising that.
Yeah, 100%. That has to be the priority. I mean, I think it's crazy, I think, that it's got to this point where someone as gifted and as young still as him, because he is a different case to Salah and Van Dijk, with 25 years of age, achieved such a ridiculous amount already in his career, but you want to see him be essentially a one club man. That's what I hope. But yeah, that needs dealing with, because I think sometimes, especially local players, can sometimes feel like they're being taken advantage of a little bit, or taken for granted, probably be a better turn of phrase, in terms of, well, you know, loves the club, boyhood fan, you know, of course he'll, you know, stick around. And it's like, but no matter what job you're in, you still want to feel loved and wanted and appreciated and rewarded. And before now, he'd never got down to his last 2 years of a deal previously. And of course, it's been, when you look at it, Liverpool haven't really had a proper sporting director since Julian Ward left, because Jörg Schmadtke was essentially just a facilitator for transfer deals. He wasn't really a sporting director. He had the title of interim sporting director, but he didn't really do all the roles that a sporting director does. You know, he certainly wasn't across
to Julian Ward.
What's that?
To Julian Ward.
Well, he did.
He didn't quite perhaps have the power he might have expected.
No, but I mean, Julian Ward was still across things like contract extensions. I just think since he left, there's been a number of issues that haven't been addressed, and probably the biggest one being Trent's contract, because I think with the age of Salah and Van Dijk, it's more understandable that you would leave it to a year before and just, well, let's just wait and see. But yeah, with Trent, I don't understand why it's been allowed to get this close, and it needs sorting, because you know, if it drags on, I don't know, say it's still not sorted in July, then you're in a situation where in 5-6 months' time, he could potentially sign a pre-contract with an overseas club. Now, I don't think that will happen, because I think Liverpool will make him the offer that is recognition for how important he is to the club going forward. And if you're Arne Slot, I'm sure that Trent Alexander-Arnold is pretty much at the top of the list of players he cannot wait to work with. But yeah, it's definitely... I know Richard Hughes has already started contacting, you know, various different agents of Liverpool players just to introduce himself more than anything else, and has made a positive impression so far. And yeah, sorting out Trent's contract is... it got to be right at the top of his in-tray.
So, playing devil's advocate here, if I'm Trent's agent, I'm going to say to him, you know what? I don't know how this is going to turn out next season. This new guy coming in, this new regime. How about sitting tight and, you know, saying to the club, you know what? If it's all going well, I'll sign at Christmas. Or, you know, I'll sign in November. Because I'm like, even if I'm Trent and, you know, boyhood Liverpudlian, we're all boyhood Liverpudlians here. But it's professional football. I'm thinking, if I'm Trent, I'm thinking I could be playing for Real Madrid. I don't want to be scrapping for fourth and fifth place with Manchester United next year.
Yeah, I can understand that thought. He wouldn't be the first. Well, I suppose Steve McManaman wasn't a boyhood Liverpudlian, wasn't he? But he did.
He was a dirty, dirty blue.
He was, but he, by the time he'd played for Liverpool. By the time he left Liverpool, he played for Liverpool for a considerable period of time. The only club that I could ever see Trent going to would be Real Madrid, if I'm being honest. I think that the only club with the resources and the team and the pull that would maybe... This is just me, again, guesswork. It's not anything I've been told. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got a young team at Real Madrid, a team that is almost set up for the next decade, you know, full of players around the same age. You know, Jude Bellingham's there. I could understand the attraction of that club. I think from his perspective, you know, the fact that Liverpool have let this sort of slide for so long, it would be understandable if his representation felt, well, we don't need to be cornered into making any quick decisions, really. You know, Liverpool haven't exactly gone out the way to sort of get this sorted out quickly. A lot of that is because, as James said, you know, the turnover of sporting directors, and I think to some degree there's a few combinations. There's the fact that Mike Gordon was obviously keen to step back. They were contemplating selling the club at one point, and then you've got Klopp's power growing and that coinciding with a sporting director coming in who's not really, you know, dealing with contract extensions. He's just dealing with incomings and outgoings. So it's been a bit of, I've got to say, it's a bit of a mess, really. For Liverpool to let it get to this situation, not just Trent, but the other three players. Don't, maybe a mess is too strong a description, but it's not ideal. I mean, given how, you know, Liverpool got a great reputation for planning ahead, to arrive in this position at the same time isn't good. One thing I would say is, you know, that they're going to have a few reasonably high earners off the wage bill this summer, you know, players whose contracts up. So that should leave some wiggle room to negotiate with current players, I guess. But then that is then reducing the size of your squad. I suspect that you're expecting Arne Slot to come in and use, you know, the younger players who've done well in brief spells this season to beef up, you know, the squad. And there's a risk in that, isn't there, Tony? I mean, Liverpool, people will, you know, people forget one of the very basics of sort of the growth of Liverpool team is, of this Liverpool team under Klopp, is, you know, the age profile of the players designed to get them into a position where they were winning trophies is the same as it's always been. You know, throughout football time, you get players who are just getting to like the early to mid-20s, and they're the ones who cost the most money. So if you want to be successful, that's the age bracket that they've got to be looking at, really. It, you know, it increases the probability of the team being successful on the pitch, which then obviously keeps a manager in the job and stops you having to change things every, you know, time and time again. You know, I hope that they're not going back to this view of they had, you know, 10 years ago. We can appoint young manager, young players coming to the club before they're ready. You know, have they not learned the lesson?
Well, that's the big question we're asking about Michael Edwards, isn't it? So, but James, just finally on Trent, and quickly before, you know, we need to move on to talk about some of the others. If Trent did say, you know what, let's leave it till the autumn, I'll sign when I see how slots going on, what would you do? Would you, if you're the club, would you just say, well, I suppose so, Trent, let's see how it goes, or would you go calling at the Bernabeu?
I've got to be honest, I would make Trent the kind of offer this summer that shows him that he's going to be an absolute cornerstone of this team for the next 5 years, and that when Van Dijk calls it a day, he will become the club captain, and that Slot wants to build his Liverpool team around him. And I think if he was to get like that, then I think it becomes a no-brainer in terms of signing it. I think if it drags on into the autumn, I mean, I think it would be very grim if it reached a point where you were even thinking about selling someone as gifted as Trent Alexander-Arnold. Yeah, of course, in the same way as Salah, if it drags on to a point where, you know, you think to yourself, is there a business decision to be made here, especially considering the way Liverpool do things with the self-sustaining business model and, you know, what you could get and reinvest and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, good luck trying to find another Trent Alexander-Arnold.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
Let's talk about some of the others. All right, in my other guys as a clairvoyant, mystic moron. I can see for Virgil van Dijk, I can see a slightly underwhelming offer financially and not as many years as he'd like. That's what I foresee for the summer.
That's very, very interesting. I think the thing you've got to ask is there anybody out there currently who's better than him? Can you think of anyone, really? I mean,
I can't.
Yeah. There isn't. I mean, I've said before, I mean, last season, I again, admits, you know, I thought, are his powers on the wane? I think he, despite the disappointment of this season, he has largely had a good season. You know, he's been excellent throughout, really. It's just, obviously, the last 6 weeks, I don't think you can really pin the blame on him for Liverpool's slide. I know he's the captain, but I think people constantly overlook the fact that he's got a different partner alongside him every single week. I mean, I don't know whether you played centre-half before, Tony, but it's bloody hard changing your partner every week. And I think it shows a lot of strength, you know, and you know, qualities that maybe people don't look at when you're constantly having to change your movements and your thought process based around what the person alongside you is going to do. So I have a lot of sympathy with him on that front. I just think I agree with you to some degree. I think that I can't see him getting a pay rise either. You know, players the other side of 30 don't get pay rises, I'm afraid. So he's going to have to maybe adjust his expectations if he wants to stay at Liverpool. I mean, he has just been made captain of the club. He could be captain for another, you know, three, four years, potentially, if he carries on playing it right. But I suppose it's going to, you know, the decision for him might sort of come down to money. I mean, Arne Slot obviously will know all about him, being from Holland, and will have watched him very closely. I mean, only a madman would think it's a good idea to move him on, really, at this stage. I think he's been excellent throughout and he's led the team really well. There's more of a debate around Salah and Van Dijk than there certainly is Trent. I mean, if they let Trent go for nothing, serious questions have to be asked of the ownership over the last couple of years and then, you know, the people involved right now. I agree with James. I think that the way you handle that is go in and make him an offer he cannot refuse.
I agree. And to answer your question, yes, I have played centre-half for the George in the Kirby League. And I had a regular partner there. And we had a great understanding. We both understood each other were awful. And we were going to, like, get slaughtered. So, yeah. But
can we talk about this a little bit more? Where did you finish in the league?
Oh, I don't remember, but it was low. We had a striker who arrived, and he was a big fella, and his nickname was Danger, and we were like, whoa, like, playing the Kirby League, that's a bit rough. Windsor Harbour, now, where the Axa is, that's where it was. And Danger, came and first chance, about 5 minutes, fell over the ball, about 6 yards out, and, the lad who brought him down turned to me and said, you know why he's nicknamed Danger, don't you? No, he said he's a danger to himself.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, but I'm glad that you teed it up in the way that you did.
True story. Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about, James, how you see the squad, you know, sort of forming up next season. Who's going to be surplus to requirements? I suppose here we have to talk about Nunes, don't we? I mean, I personally think it would be, despite his obvious flaws, it would be an act of madness to get rid at this point. But, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I think Nunes is a really tricky one because I think sometimes you can be swayed, can't you, by just what's happened in the last 4-6 weeks. And, you know, and if we were having this conversation probably 3 months ago.
Yeah, we were saying the future was in safe hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult. I think it's going to be interesting to see what Slot thinks. We don't know, do we? We don't know whether he already has an opinion on Nunes. We don't know whether he'll come in with an open mind and it's up to Darwin Nunes to win him over. We also don't know to what extent it's going to be a collaborative approach, isn't it? I know Slot isn't coming in as an all-powerful Jurgen Klopp type figure. He's coming in as a head coach, as we've talked about for many, many weeks. That was what the search was for, a head coach rather than a manager, effectively. So decisions will be made in in kind of collaboration with Hughes and Edwards. And I think even with Nunes, you think, well, again, it kind of depends. If you were going to sell him, what would you get for him? You know, who would be willing to pay what? Because it's certainly not, you know, it was an £85 million investment with the add-ons included. And I don't think he's been, I don't think he's disappointed to the level where the idea that you just cut your losses and move on. I think that's ridiculous. You know, it would very much depend on, you know, what was on the table and what you think you could go and get with it. I still think that there is enough of a player there that it's possible that Slot could come in and think, do you know what, this guy has got all the tools and I back myself as a coach to really, really get him firing again. Because I do think with Nunes, some of it is in his head as well as in his boots, because, you know, the number of times, isn't it, when he just absolutely lashes it when you just want a little bit of composure, times when he overthinks things and his decision-making lets him down. And can he still learn those things? Can he improve those things? I still cling to the hope he can do. So I certainly don't go along with this idea that he's some like lost cause, that we should just be, you know, show him the door, which seems to be the instant reaction to a few setbacks. You know, he's, again, you know, his numbers aren't that bad this season. You know, he's more assists than anyone else. What is it, 18 goals in all comps? It's just his season is made to look worse than it has been because he's fallen to bits at the business end of the season when more than ever you needed him. So yeah, in terms of the overall squad, I think one of the attractions of going for Slot was that they don't think, you know, they wanted someone who would suit the squad he's walking into because they don't think wholesale changes are needed. You know, yes, Liverpool probably need three or four. It's not like a rebuilding job, is it? You know, you've got Matip and Thiago out of contract. You know, I think you probably just need, you know, three or four high-class additions. And then, you know, the rest of it is Slot getting more out of the players already there.
Yeah, and also I think it's worth recalling that when Klopp came in 2015, he thought he was just going to do a head coach role. He didn't particularly want to do the management stuff. But also, I mean, and I wonder about this with Slot. Klopp told the ownership that he could compete not for all four trophies with the squad they had there in place. He could take Brendan Rodgers' squad and compete for all four trophies. You know what that told me? That told me I haven't watched them. But it's but managers come in and they tell owners things like that. But, Si, who's surplus to requirements, do you think?
Well, there's the two players that James mentioned there, in the sense that they're not going to give Matip another contract. Other side of 30, you know, another big injury. Thiago, I feel sad about him because I love watching him play when he's fit, but he's no use to anyone when he's not available, and he hasn't been available enough. He must be on big wages. You know, I think when they got him in from Bayern Munich, he just won the Champions League, hadn't he? And being instrumental in them winning the Champions League. So those two players will go. I think they certainly need a centre-half to come in.
Do you persist with Konate?
Well, he's obviously got a lot of stick, hasn't he, the last couple of weeks, particularly his performances haven't been as strong this season. I still think he's a good player, but I think he's had a bad couple of months.
And he's never fit. He's never fit. That's the thing, more than a bad couple of months.
I do have a slightly shankly view on players who are injured. They're just no good to anyone. Where there is some mitigation is that I think the expectation, you know, training sessions, playing for Klopp's team is so high in terms of the intensity. It takes a specially designed player to be able to do that. Now, obviously, with Slot coming in, it will be interesting to see, A, what the training is like, B, what it'll mean for the medical staff and the medical department and how that interacts with the players and has an impact on availability, I'd say. And then, I mean, for other players, I think they could still do with a midfielder who, you know, I know, again, everybody's sort of got excited about Endo, you know, being a surprise package of the season. But I think if Liverpool really want to be at the high end of the table, they need somebody in that position who falls into the world-class bracket. And I wouldn't say that he's in that. And then the other question marks are right across the front line, really. You know, I think I think Diaz might be an attractive sale for Liverpool, given his age, given... I know he scored goals in the second half of the season, but I think there'd be interest in him. And for me as well, Nunes, it comes down to this, Tony, that when under the, you know, the old front line, you knew that when they went through on goal, they were going to score. There was never any doubt about it. You're never ever thinking, oh, we might miss. Whereas certainly with the two players that I just mentioned, there are doubts. I don't think they bring a guarantee of goals. So for me, that has to be evaluated, certainly. So that's on five players, isn't it? That's maybe more players than we thought. Did I mention, you know, some competition for Robertson at left back as well? You know, I think Tsimikas has sort of loitered around for quite a long time and done, you know, played a role in Liverpool winning two cups. Let's not forget. Penalty against Chelsea, corner kick against Chelsea. But is he reliable enough, you know, when to play games and to start games against opponents that allow Robertson to have a rest? And what has the impact been on Robertson, you know, given the number of games that he's had to play over a long period of time?
James, of the young players or youngish players, is there anyone who you think might be available?
You mean in terms of sales?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be surprised, to be honest, because I think not unless you got some crazy offers that come in. I don't see any young players there that a new manager coming in would immediately go, well, I don't need him, because I think probably one of the big appeals of the job for Slot is the fact that there is so much young talent to work with. And, you know, in what's been a disappointing end of the season, you know, Kwanzaa has been an absolute revelation in terms of positivity that he's generated this season. You know, him, Bradley as well. You know, Bobby Clark, I still see as, you know, very technically gifted and having a part to play. You wonder whether maybe Clark and McConnell might need a loan next season. You know, Stefan Bacetic, you know, he was back on the bench at West Ham, wasn't he? You know, he's had a torrid year with injuries, but let's not forget how good he was during a period when Liverpool had completely fallen to bits midway through last season. So it'll be interesting to see what Bacetic is able to do under Slot. So, yeah, and of course you've got someone like Ben Doak, who big things were expected of him. But again, injuries have wrecked his season. So, yeah, those, you know, pre-season is going to be, you know, we always talk about pre-season. Under Klopp, it was always, he would always take the kids, when they always take the kids on the training camp. And his message to them was, right, go and prove to me that you should be part of the plans for this season. And every year, one or two would come out of nowhere and grasp chances. And that has got to be the mindset for those kids going into this summer. Because let's not forget, you've got the Euros and you've got the Copa America. So that Liverpool squad, when Slot starts getting down to work at the start of July, is going to be heavily depleted. So, you know, especially probably in the early friendlies, and, you know, I'll be off on the tour of the States when Liverpool play three games over there. That's going to be an amazing platform for those kids to show the new guy what they can do.
Yeah, and just before wrapping up very quickly, Kelleher, will he be sold this summer?
Again, I think there must be a decent chance. I think he would have gone last summer if there'd been the offer that Liverpool thought represented his value. Liverpool obviously don't want to lose him. Why would you want to lose him? You know, he's the best backup keeper in the Premier League, and he's proved that with how brilliantly well he deputised during Alisson's lengthy absence. But of course, the problem with having a number two who's that good and that ambitious is it's not realistic to think you can just keep him for the next 5 years. But, you know, last season, for all the talk last summer, you know, they had various loan offers and, you know, would have been a loan fee and pay his wages. But that Liverpool were like, well, no, we'd rather just keep him. So I think Kelleher is 20, 25 million. I think if Liverpool got that kind of offer and he wanted to go, then it would be very difficult to stand in his way.
Well, that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Simon for joining me and you for listening. Remember, you can let us know your thoughts heading into the summer window by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com. We'll be back next week and we'll catch you then.
The Athletic.